I'm back from my break. I've got a debut author guest on. I've got a three-legged dog. It's fall, and I'm ready to get back to the podcast. It is I Should Be Writing, Season 18, Episode... I want to say 55? That sounds right. Sounds good. We'll go with that.
Well, I should be writing.
Hi there, welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is a podcast for wannabe fiction writers, and I am your host, Mer Lafferty. We have a guest today. We have Tanvi Burva, author of Monsters Born and Made, and I'm just happy to be back podcasting. How are you, Tanvi?
I'm great. I mean, it's been 1 week since my book release. I'm kind of letting go of some of that weird high and then weird crash thing, so... Yeah, I'm doing just fine right now.
Good, good. I usually start the show with what I've been up to, but I've had a break, so there's been a lot. There's been, Worldcon, where, read from my new book, Station Eternity, that was cool, and, did some panels, lost two Hugos, that was fun. And then moved my kid into college the next day, right after Worldcon. Came home, did not get COVID somehow, and then got my COVID booster, which wiped me out big time. And then I got a couple of migraines, and now it's suddenly the end of the next week, and I'm like, I really have not accomplished a lot, but at least I got the kid into school, I achieved a Worldcon, dog got surgery. I'm going to call all of those a win, even though, actually I have been working. I have, because I've been doing a lot of promo stuff for the book coming out next month. So, got a lot of guest posts written, did an interview yesterday, got two more interviews this weekend, so I am gearing up my promo stuff, which technically counts as writing, even though it does not get a book done. how have you been doing since... tell us about your book launch, Tanvi.
Yeah, I mean, I did all of that stuff, and it is writing. It is so much work. Like, I have spent my entire August and September so far doing all these, you know, guest posts and everything, and yeah, they're not easy. It just they take so much of your time, and it just sometimes it feels like you're just repeating yourself. And,
yes,
you know, it gives me so much like anxiety that, you know, people are gonna think I'm such a hack. I'm just like, somebody gave me like a script and I am just like kind of repeating that every yeah. So, and I also have to get my COVID booster. Like, I just remembered that my dad told me to look it up, and I have to go get my booster.
But I mean, how many times can you answer tell us what inspired your book? I mean,
I realized
I'd started a blog post like last month, and then I wrote another one yesterday, and then I went back to the one I started and finished it and realized that I added a lot more to the one I started before, which made me worry about the one I just wrote because that didn't have as much information. But then, well, they're different places and different audiences, and I didn't know how close they should be, and I just got all up in my head. So, It is a hard thing to balance.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I wrote about that image that I had when I, you know, started this book, and now when I answer that question, I always think back to that first interview, and I'm like, you know, I said nothing of interest. And I just feel like, you know, maybe if I could go back in time and I could add these things now, I would sound more interesting. I would sound like, you know, that I know what I'm saying. But yeah, you can think about it all you want, but like when you're actually talking about it, it just never hits the way it does in your mind.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Big time. One of my characters is based off of an essay that Virginia Woolf wrote that Ursula K. Le Guin then wrote about and then I wrote a character based on those two high literary icons' opinions. And I'm like, I just wrote a space murder book, and I'm trying to base one of my characters off of these intense literary thoughts of two distinguished women writing about the older woman as a character in stories. And I'm like, oh, this is not going to sound, this is not going to sound impressive at all. So it's a lot of second guessing. I feel confident with the fiction, and then suddenly when it comes to the nonfiction about my fiction, it all goes out the window.
Like, I recently wrote this essay on the necessity of eco fantasy, mm-hmm. and my examples were Octavia Butler and N.K. Jemisin, and I'm like, who am I kidding? Like, what am I doing here?
Two very good examples, though.
It just makes you feel like such a fraud. Like, objectively, yeah, you know, everyone goes through this, and mm-hmm. everyone talks about it, but it is so hard to, like, convince yourself to, you know.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Just go.
But, you know, you're also bringing yourself up as well-read. I mean, you got that going for you. So.
Okay. I hope that works.
I don't know. I'm trying here. I'm also trying to convince myself. But, I mean, I think your book does measure up with the you know, the eco message and everything. Is it fits with the other two. I think you're perfectly legit in using those connections. Before we get deeply into the book, we're going to talk about go back to good news. It's been a while. I did get our monthly update from Brian. Brian does not join us in the chat, but Brian does tell us his rejections every month. So Brian's rejections for August are 7. So congratulations, Brian. We're all here rooting for you. Yes. I'm going to hit that button. And hit the yay button for those reject. Why is the yay button not working? Yay button. I tested it before, I swear. There we go. Okay. Yay button is yaying. Tommy, I don't know if you started watching on Twitch or not, but we just got a bunch of confetti falling past us for the yay button. That's what the yay button does. So, I'm going to throw in some rejections into the chat. We got Shauna in chat. Hello. Good news. New flooring will be finished this morning. One more thing finished for Shaunatopia. That's fantastic. Yeah, Shauna's path to getting their own condo has been fraught with a lot more difficulties than expected. So, congratulations. That's 4, 5... One more. Oh, 2 more, rather. 6. And if anybody else has any good news, or either in rejections or acceptances, please put them in the chat. Or you can email me, mightymer@gmail.com, and we can talk about, tell me what your good news is, and we'll talk about it on the next podcast. Not sure if it's good news, but I went in for the office to clean out my desk. Hybrid work going forward. That's fantastic. It's hard. You don't hear that very often these days. You hear people going back to the office, not going forward with hybrid work, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
Tommy, do you have any good news or news to share?
I mean, I did not make the invitee list, and that's not true. But at the same time, it just gave me like that. I got so annoyed with that that it gave me the push to like start writing the synopsis for the next project that I had been like delaying for so long. I'm like, okay, fine. Whatever, we're just gonna push through.
So you got annoyed with all the obsession with it, or the.
I think it isn't that, you know, not the amount of books that get published. Majority of it will never make lists.
Yeah,
we know that, right?
Oh yeah.
So it's like it's still like the anticipation building up to that moment. As a person who has anxiety, it was so hard.
Yeah.
But like the moment that moment passed, I was like, okay, fine. We're the Buddha. I am so like relieved that moment has gone. And yeah, I can like put my mind to work again. So yeah, I count that as a bittersweet win, I guess. It's a win.
That's great.
I mean, rejections never really stop in writing, no matter like what stage you're in. It's just, they're gonna keep coming.
Yeah, yeah. It's all sorts of rejections.
Yeah,
I got, I found a, the buzz about my book has been largely positive, but then I found, like, the one bad review, and I wasn't even looking for it. I just kind of stumbled across it yesterday, and I was just kind of crushed, and that made me sad, but, you know, it's not going to appeal to everybody, but, you
it's
know.
It's hard.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Let's see. Underpub has gotten 8 rejections since the 18th. That's fantastic. A writer not wanting to be rejected is like a boxer that doesn't want to be punched. Well, to be fair, I don't think the boxer does want to be punched, but they should expect to be punched.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, if that's it, I'm going to manually edit the count. I'm going to hit the button for Underpub, though. Yay button. Will the yay button work? The A button will not work. The A button has forsaken me, but that's fine. But yeah, let's get started talking about your book. I've been, there's so many reasons I'm excited to have you on the show. You have a really strong, amazing debut. You've got a history in, you know, blogging about books, and so you can come at it from almost like a critic standpoint, but also, you know, you've done essays about mental health, which is of great interest on this show as well. And I'm going to be talking about writing myths and debunking them in the next couple of episodes, so I wanted to touch on that. But we can get started with talking about Monsters Born and Made. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's, very technically, it's about a 16-year-old girl who captures sea beasts called Mary Stags and trains them for this elite chariot race tournament. And these beasts, they are inspired by this bit of Indian myth. And you can only find, like, one line which people expand upon. It's such a rare, such a weird myth about green water horses that live at the bottom of the Indian Ocean. And they're called the Farsi Bahari, which comes from Arabic, Arabic term it's called Al-Faras, which basically means like horses of the water or something like that. And it's a very secretive kind of myth, but like, you know, you will find this mention of water horses here and there everywhere. And it's like, it was so fascinating, and I really wanted to use that when I first had that image of sea beasts. And but like, there's this book Scorpio Races which had done water horses, so I kind of took that idea and I just turned them into like these creatures, like the which I imagine as sort of like a velociraptor with a stag's head. And like, I just went all in with it, like changing things, adding to it, taking different myths and take, like, sea creatures. There are so many amazing sea creatures. Like, you just cannot, like, you know, you, there's just so much. They're so beautiful. They're so deadly and they're so alien. And it's just, you'll always find something in there. So yeah, I kind of like combined mythology and all that stuff. And it was really fun.
That's very cool. You take a lot of class and caste issues and bring them to this book with the chariot races and you know, who's involved in it. What can you tell us about that within the book?
Yeah, okay. The setup of this world is obviously South Asian, but at the same time, there are influences of like the Greek society, which I picked up from like this ancient Bactrian Indian kingdom, which was when Alexander was around the area, like, you know, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India. So there are a lot of sources that talk about life then and everything. And I think that really lent itself well to the kind of story I wanted to tell. Plus, as a South Asian person, like, I have never experienced a story featuring a South Asian character who also explores Indian casteism. And I think that's such a privilege to take because, you know, casteism exists within India, within South Asia, and it also exists within diaspora. Like, Google recently tried to quash these two employees who brought up that, you know, there was casteism in the office, and they tried to do that. And Apple recently has introduced like an anti-casteism thing in their office, so that was a good step from them. So yeah, I mean,
oh, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry, I thought you said antique casteism, and I'm like, no, it's not good that they brought that back. What are you talking about? You said anti. I'm very sorry, I just,
yeah,
it scared me for a little bit. And yeah, gotcha. Good, glad that Apple's doing that.
Some of like my Indian accent kind of my accent is like this combination of American, British, Indian, all of that combined together. It's yeah, sometimes it's good. Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure if I misheard it, other people may have, and I just wanted to make sure no, your accent's fine.
So
carry on, please.
Yeah. So basically, that casteism, it's like there are a lot of South Asian inspired fantasies. I mean, we're at a place that, you know, they're growing, but none of them really touch upon it. And in fact, some of the stories that deal with royalties and aesthetics, they're not actually that good of a representation from a caste point of view. And it's not even about like I am not very big on representation too. Like I know I shouldn't be saying this, but like representation for me just means that I get to be in a space without like justifying myself, which is not the same thing as other people want, you know, to put out there in their arts, which is fine. I just, yeah, whatever. So basically what that does is these stories from my point of view are actually regressive, and I can't expect every Indian or Indian origin writer to deal with it. So I knew that I wanted to deal with it myself. And I have, because it's, I mean, people can do that, but then if they like don't deal with it with care, with, you know, sensitivity, it just it's of no use. We can just go back to living in real life. What's the point of reading? So yeah.
So how do you address it in your book with your characters?
Yeah. I think, Coral, who's the protagonist, is an outcast. Like, she exists between two castes, the upper caste and the lower caste, right? So the lower caste hates this family because they're not like, they don't see them as part of themselves because they work for the upper caste, and the upper caste will never like truly embrace them because they are not one of them. So basically this family is like in the middle of it. It's inspired by the Dalit people in India, who are, I mean, Dalit is a reclaimed word, and these people, my family is part of it, these people are the ones that are referred to as untouchables in India. Like, you cannot, like, even now you can find out that you can like look up in the news and a Dalit person has been killed because they dared to walk in front of an upper caste person's house, and their like shadow fell upon the stairs or the porch or some like that. Sorry for the language. So it's like all of that stuff. It's out there, and we tend to treat this as not a thing, especially in the diaspora. It's not easy to, you know, see people, you know. And I'm not saying that people in the West are not oppressed. If I was in the Americas right now, I know that I would be discriminated against. But at the same time, people need to acknowledge the privilege they do hold over people, other people. Like, we have intersectional marginalizations for a reason. And yeah, so it's like I can't expect casteism to be dealt with properly in a Hindu-inspired book, fantasy book, by an upper caste person. So I have to write it. And with Monsters Born and Made, Coral is basically in a very tight spiral. She's like, because they're coming at her from all sides. Like, you know, there's this one family singled out completely. And she has no support from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Most of her decisions kind of seem like extreme. And I know I've seen some reviews that are always like, you know, this is a stupid economic decision. Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just do that? And they don't do that because that's the social system. That's what, you know, that's what's been imposed on them. No, they cannot like decide what money they are going to get, they're going to give, or, you know, why this person is not talking to them nicely, or
mm-hmm.
why they're so... That's how social systems are. That's
yeah.
how, you know, oppressions exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing that really got me when I was reading about your experience with this book is how on edits you realized you'd gone to a deeper place personally than you had anticipated and actually sought mental health help. And I'm bringing this up now because I talk about that freely on this show, how I hate the stigma of how mental health is not to be talked about, and I really hate it in terms of being a creative person in that everyone's expected to suffer for their art, or if you medicate yourself, you are squashing your creativity. And so I try to be honest with that here. And so I was interested when you mentioned that you were already talking about your mental health experience with this book. I was wondering if you talk about it a little bit with us here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I knew that I had anxiety, but I hadn't gotten like a diagnosis. And, while writing, there's this one instance around the middle of the book where somebody asks Coral about her anger, and she kind of has an outburst.
Mm-hmm.
And that outburst that just came out of nowhere, and for me, that's like the hinge that the entire book, you know, revolves on.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to like sit back quietly for a few days, think about what this is that I've just written, because, you know, Coral has like a lot of these life experiences that she shares with me. And then I had to, like, when I was revising, I had to go through it slowly and like pick it up. And then I realized that I had written Coral as having an undiagnosed bipolar disorder, which was the thing that was going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I wrote this in 2018, the first, like, that was the first draft in 2018, and I revised in 2019, 2020, and in 2020, I went to the therapist, finally. And, so that therapist, me and my sibling both, and that therapist called my dad, and he's like, you have to come see me, too, because, you know, your kids are, and we're, like, grown kids, we're not, like, you know, kids, because, you know, your kids are going to, like, if you don't come this time, then you won't be able to meet your kids again. That's what he said. I remember this very clearly. And then my dad was just completely shocked because, you know, we had just like kind of, my mom died when I was 18. And that has created such a weird like situation in the house where we try to, you know, bond together, but we can't because, you know, we just always feel her absence so much and all of that. So that had created a weird environment in our house. And my dad and I, we'd like to think that we were very close, but we weren't. We just like to think so. So when that moment came, it just kind of blew apart everything. And we had to like sit down with the therapist, talk about everything. And I had to like go back to my childhood. I had to like, you know, think about everything that I had suppressed. I had been sexually assaulted since I was a child by strangers, not like family people, and all of that. It just culminated like my mom's death and this and that and all that stuff, going through the world as a, you know, person with mental illness, but you don't know that, like in a gendered body, in, you know, all of that stuff. And it culminated to the point that we had to have this therapy. We had to go see them. And I think that if I had had this help before, I would have been in a better place. I, you know, could have like maybe been able to write properly before, or, you know, maybe I would have pulled myself together before. Like, I don't think this, like, completely, you know, magically fixes things up, but having this therapy, having access to medicines and all that stuff, it has really helped me. Like, it has, I am a different person than who I was. Like, I was a ghost of myself at the age of around, like, 25, 26. I am 30 now, and I am doing so much better. And I am so glad that I wrote this book. I am so glad that, you know, I could recognize this and have, like, access to medications. So that has been really, really good.
That's great. I'm sorry for you had to go through that, but I'm really glad that the book helped. Now that you... I don't know how to ask this. So while you know, I said it's awful that we suffer, you know, people think we have to suffer for our art, our experiences do drive our fiction.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I that is one thing that created Monsters Born and Made is your experiences. Now that you're getting help and feel a lot better, how do you think that's driving your writing going forward? Like, can you tell if it's affecting your next book, or is it, do you think it's something on a subconscious level?
I think once something like this has, like, gotten in your brain, it, like, does affect how you see the world. But at the mm-hmm. same time, I think I am better at analyzing things now. Like, the second book that I'm working on right now, it's set in the same world. It kind of continues the story as well. And that protagonist, like, she's strong. I won't say that, you know, but she's emotionally compromised. She's not in the greatest of spaces. And even if she was, like, completely mentally healthy, which she isn't, I think this would definitely continue to affect my writing. And mm-hmm. and I don't think that if I want to say that even if I wasn't, like, you know, completely in the throes of this mental illness, I would still be able to write it, because, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, you see around now. And if you're writing fiction, I think you get, like, attuned to feelings more, and, you know, it just, I don't think you have to suffer to write or make art.
Yeah.
Like, if I didn't have to suffer, I would have been much more proficient. Like, mm-hmm. I would be able to, like, get out of my bed on time and be able to write and meet my deadlines on time. But it's experience.
So what is your next project?
So I'm working on, like, book two of this same story. I mean, it follows another protagonist, but it does continue the same story and converges towards the end. And, like, I know that this story, the first one, Monsters Born and Made, is emotionally complete, but, like, the overall story of the world, like, there's a lot of it. So I'm really hoping to explore some more of that in book two. And if things work out in, like, and by the saints of publishing, maybe I get to write book three. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, we know a little bit too much what you're talking about here. I'm still getting people saying, so are you going to write another book in that series you did? I'm like, well, no, that didn't happen. It's unfortunate, but it's, but I mean, it looks like it's a solid book, and you got a lot of really good coverage. Solid sounds really rude. I'm just saying that you know, I enjoyed it. It really grabs you. I was really impressed with that. And, you know, you said you were influenced by The Hunger Games, which you can tell, but you've also got, you know, your own, it doesn't feel like a copy. You've got the influenced by going on, and then you've got your own path to tread, and it's just a really powerful book. You started out, from what I read, you did a lot of Hunger Games blogging. And coverage. What is that? That implies more than one bit. Did you have a fan site, or did you participate?
Yeah.
Well, tell me about your Hunger Games experience.
Yeah, I started the fan site when I was like 18, I think. And the first book had just come out. It had been a few months, I think. And it was just, I was really impressed with the books. And the movie talk had just started. It was like nothing was, you know, for sure, they as movie talks go. But I was just so impressed by the books. And I was like, I need to talk to other people about this. I need a community to talk to.
Yeah.
And Twitter had just, you know, started at the time, I think. So we'd gotten on Twitter, me and my sibling, and we talked to people and we kind of grew that into a community. So it became like one of those very early fan sites that, you know, attracted the notice of like the Scholastic people who were the publishers and Lionsgate who were the movie people. And I just started kind of working with them. So that was like an amazing experience.
Wow.
Yeah, I got like, you know, BTS stuff from Scholastic, sometimes excerpts and stuff, and like, you know, exclusive stills from movies to release later, and all that press stuff that I was just watching earlier from like the other side. And it was so cool. Like, I mean, I wish I could still continue it, but like, it's gotten out of my hands. Plus, like, we don't have a culture of fan sites anymore. I kind of miss it, but yeah, it was fun. That was really fun.
Yeah, I guess the social media is kind of taken over what used to be the fan sites, or the fanfic sites like Archive of Our Own.
Yeah.
But
I mean, back then, there was like handful of fics there, and you know, Wattpad has completely had like a whole rebirth thing now. Like, it was wild in those days. Like, we had like, I don't know, we had like one fake, two fake of like whatever, and now people have like, they're like spoiled for choice.
Yeah.
Which I had.
Yeah, there's talk in the chat of missing fan site culture.
Yeah.
Social media's ruined the internet. Ruined it, I say. I'm sorry, Underpope. You can keep shaking your cane at the clouds. I don't think it's going to turn the tide back, unfortunately. So, do you have a release date for your next book? I mean, I know this one just came out and you're still in the whirlwind. Is it public?
It would be late 2023 or early 2024, like around that same time. Yeah. But like not September next year, because like it's gotten away from us.
Yeah. Well, these are all my questions. Is there anything you want to talk about, advice to new writers or anything I didn't ask you?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just like really interested in conversations about world building and how people like world build or do in their like fantasies and stuff. I really like talking about it and like how I went into this book.
Well,
organically.
Tell us how you did the world building.
Yeah, I mean, like we were talking earlier, how many times could you, you know, talk about inspirations of the book? But
yeah.
Like there was this one image that inspired me, which was this jagged island surrounded by like a terrible sea, and there were sea beasts in it, and it was such a powerful, such a vivid image that, you know, I had to stop and like think about it. What's going on this island, and what are these sea creatures, what happens, you know, like that island seems so like just sad there into the sea. What happens when these creatures come on the land? And that man versus nature theme kind of organically gave me so many ideas, like how do people deal with these creatures, what kind of life do they live, and that sun doesn't look really, you know, welcoming. How do these people live?
Yeah.
And how are they surviving, and how did they get on this island? It was just like, this book is like a mix of like a fantasy tropes, but it is sci-fi, like, you know, it's like a mix of both those things, because I really love like mixed genre stories that can't be categorized like in one or exact terms. But yeah, so, you know, that was really fun, because I had, before this, I had written like 4 manuscripts, and I had queried and revised and went through rejections and all that, and they were all like second world fantasies inspired by, you know, those typical European settings with like some Asian stuff thrown in. There were assassins, there were princes, there were all that stuff. And I guess I really like reading that stuff. But, you know, this one just came out of the blue, just suddenly hit me. And I knew that I had to write this. And I really loved building the world of it. And I think that's something that my editor also talked to me about. So, yeah, I was like such a... I think of it now as my strength. So I really focus on it. And I have really enjoyed, like, working on this book.
That's great.
The world. Yeah.
It's good to have enjoyed something that takes so much freaking work. I've had a project that I was just eager to get out the door. I was so tired of it. But I love it when people talk about world building, because I am not good at talking about world building. I don't know what it is. It's like I think it might be a little bit too subconscious for me. Like, I can do it, but in telling people advice or anything, it's just, I just do it. What, I don't know what I do, but I'm always interested to hear other people talk about it. One of your dedications is, I believe... Was it to your dad showed you the sea?
Yeah, it's to my sibling. The first sibling, one for Minnie. Yeah, for Minnie, who likes squids and crabs.
Mm-hmm.
And my sibling was the one who, like, you know, kept coming up to me. And they were like, you have sea creatures, so when are you going to put in a crab? And I was like, they are just like, you know, he was just after my life saying, you know, put in a crab there.
That is awesome.
Like, I think the second race has a, like, this giant crab thing, and I added it, like, at the very last moment, because, you know, I was like, where else am I gonna put it there? Mm-hmm. And that crab became like a plot point going further in, so that was really fun. Yeah, and the second half of my dedication is to my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so
we live in like, you know, in India we live in like the plains, which are like super hot, like all that heat wave stuff, that's what's going on here. So like going to the ocean, seeing it was like such a shock to my senses. It
right.
Just, yeah, it was wonderful.
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I would love to hear either you or anybody who can talk about world building, talk about when you put something in as a whim and it suddenly becomes a major plot point.
Yeah.
To all the dog lovers, I want to say that I've been trying to, like, keep her calm, and I gave her a treat, and that was a mistake. And so now she's lying down there going, growl, growl, and then she paws at me, and she does another little growl to make with the treats. I really do have to set... I used to have a dog cam set up, and then when my other dog, who was always by my side, he died in June, and so haven't really... gotten her settled in his place because she likes to wander around more. But I think during this convalescent time we might set up another dog cam because she's all here and demanding and wanting more snacks. So I'm very sorry, but
no.
with my attention split to looking at the ground, I at least wanted to explain why. But the idea of a whim becoming a major plot point. How did you feel that came about, or were you comfortable, or was it fun, or all that stuff?
It was definitely fun. I've had this happen like multiple times when I'm writing. I wrote a short story for a YA anthology, For Shadow, by Emily XR Pan and Novaren Suma, and that story is a surreal story, and it kind of turned out to be a mystery, and I did not know that I could write mysteries or like I could do foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And like the editors both were like so impressed by that, and I'm like, I had no idea what you were saying. I was literally just making it up as I go along. But yeah, it happens. Like, I think it happens the more you write, the kind of like cogs start turning in your brain. You just, Chekhov sits in your brain and he's like, mm-hmm. do this, it's gonna pay off in the end.
I like that. Yeah. But do you consider yourself a discovery writer?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of have like the major plot points, like written out, so it helps me to see what I'm working towards. But I do not like have like a detailed thing. It's more like it's a map on a hike. I know where I'm going, but like, you know, I still have like the option of exploration and discovery, and that's really fun.
Yeah.
Even with my world building, like I know like the major points, like with this island thing, I knew that there was going to be a place where like the rich people live inside, safe from the sun. I knew what happens there, but like the rest of it, I had to fill in as I go. And I think it's fun. It's like both of best of both worlds. So yeah, it's definitely fun.
Great. Well, I think that is it for me. Do you have any last comments for new writers?
I mean, this is going to sound so trite, but like perseverance is the only thing I can speak of. Yeah, because like I have been writing since I was a single digit child, and I started pursuing publishing when I was like 19 or 20, and like it doesn't seem that young now, because when you see like younger writers coming up, but at the same time, you can, if you can afford to, you have to like keep working at it if you want this, and you can take breaks if you want to, like publishing is not going anywhere, and all this, it's just there.
That's a really good point.
I know younger people feel like a lot of, you know, like I have to get published at a certain age or nobody will care. Yeah, that's just a social media thing. Don't let that like get at you.
No.
Of the, we don't publish until us, like I am comparatively very young. I am 30, right? And if you read like older profiles of writers, and they're like, there's people are so shocked that they published at 30 or 35. These are young writers. We have just let ourselves, you know, let social media get to us.
As if we didn't worship youth enough, now we got social media to do it. Well, thank you so much. It has been amazing talking to you.
For having me. I had fun.
Good. The information on where to find Tanvi is in the chat, and it is tanviburva.com. I will have that in the show notes for you listening later. And are you on social media? Is there anywhere people should find you other than your website?
Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of them. Like, that's just my name, Tanvi Burva. That's my username everywhere.
Okay, great. Oh, and I can finally say a piece of good news that was embargoed till today. I just saw it's live. Station Eternity is on library reads as one of the top 10 books of October, which I did not know was a thing, but my publisher was very excited about it, and it was hidden until today. So, and that's like not just science fiction. It's like, it looks like they pick one of, they grab a lot of different genres, and they say these are the top 10 books voted on by librarians. And so Station Eternity's up there, so that's really cool, and I can finally say that. So sorry about not putting that in the correct part, but I should probably talk to you offline about TikTok, because I've got a block there, and I've got a box of books downstairs that I really need to do an unboxing video of, or my assistant will kill me. And so I'm not very good with the whole TikTok thing, but
yeah, I feel so out of my depth on TikTok, but I just go at it.
Yeah, you're gonna have to do that.
Fool yourself. You're gonna have to make a fool of yourself on social media, so why not? Just go for it.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Okay, I'll do that. I'll make a fool of myself. For you, Tanvi. Yes.
Fun making a fool of yourself. Like, then nobody has any expectations of you. You're just gonna...
That's true. I mean, if you make a fool of yourself and someone's like, you made a fool of yourself, and you're like, yeah, that was the goal. If you try to be all debonair and they say you made a fool of yourself, then you could be embarrassed. But if you go out trying to make a fool of yourself, this is my new life plan. I'm just making it up as I go along. Just go with me here, guys.
Yeah, it's a lot stressful.
Yeah. Well, thank you. The book is Monsters Born and Made. My guest is Tanvi Burva. I am Merle Lafferty. Station Eternity comes out in 3 weeks or so, And you can find me at mightymer@gmail.com. And I'm going to get better with my openings and closings, but it's been a heck of a 2 weeks, so I'm going to ease back into that whole thing. Uh-oh, dog needs to get out. Oh.
Oh.
Come on, you got this. You go. Okay, good. She made it past the mess. Oh, boy. And thank you, everybody who are watching live. Thank you, those of you who are listening later. And hopefully we can have you back on the show with your next book, Tanvi. We'd love to have you.
I would love to come back. This was
excellent. So fun. Oh, good. Thank you. I'll take care. And we'll see you next Monday with Ditch Diggers.
I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support.
Doctor Who.
Shopify helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like that, let's put it online and see what happens stage.
And the site is live.
That we opened a store and need a fast checkout stage.
Thanks, you're all set.
That count it up and ship it around the globe stage.
This one's going to Thailand.
And that, wait, did we just hit 1 million orders stage? Whatever your stage, businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/listen.